Well, from Gloria Steinem's foundation feminist story, Katrina's running story, to an epic Viking saga. The sagas are the foundation myths of Iceland. Well, this Nordic country established in the 9th century by Vikings, they left no tangible legacy, no ruins, no cathedrals, nothing, except a set of powerful stories, sagas, devised to allow a people to remember their history and their ancestry. And no matter how far Iceland's sons and daughters roam, this Nordic dreaming stays with them, which is how Richard Feidler, the host of Conversations here on RN, ended up living around the corner from a Viking in Brisbane. Author and academic Dr. Kari Gislason, and how they both ended up travelling back to Iceland to explore these oral traditions for a radio series called Sagaland. Let's listen.
This is Iceland. It's a place that's almost supernaturally beautiful and wild. There are almost no trees, and the sky goes on forever, and the birdsong sounds like nothing I've ever heard before. Iceland lies on the fault line between Europe and America, and so there are craggy volcanoes pushing up from beneath the Earth's surface, and there are massive, heavy glaciers pushing back down on it. My friend Kari and I have come to Iceland, the place where he was born, to tell a story and to uncover a mystery.
Richard and Kari, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
Hello, Ellen.
This sounds just like a boy's own adventure. You're just trying to make it sound epic, aren't you, Richard?
That's exactly what it is, Ellen. You've got me absolutely down to rights there. It was very much a boy's own adventure. It came out from Kari and I sitting around one night in a bar, actually.
Of course.
And of course, as these things do. And Kari was talking about the sagas, and I was only vaguely familiar with them. And I asked him to tell the story that's in our first episode of Gunnar, the warrior who meets this woman, the most dangerous woman in Iceland, Helgeth. And I was kind of mesmerized by the way Kari was telling it, and I thought, this would make such beautiful radio. And then Kari was, well, why don't we go to Iceland? Why don't we tell it in situ?
And Kari, forgive me, but this is my perception of your Icelandic sagas.
Yeah.
Is this about right? There's an epic story. There's a feud. The feud escalates. There's a crisis. Someone dies. There's a settlement of some kind, and everybody calms down. Is that about it?
Yeah, you've got it, Ellen. That's pretty much it. Most of them revolve around an escalating feud of some kind. I guess the other thing that I would add is that we get a very clear and intimate portrait of the life of the Vikings. You know, it's not just a sort of fable or an allegory like you get in some other medieval literature. What you're getting is an encounter with the Vikings and with their, you know, with their dreams and with their hopes and with their family life.
And so in that way, it's sort of domestic, it's historic, it's melodramatic, it's everything.
Well, the sagas get called family sagas in the English-speaking world. And that's because they're essentially about how families get along and then how they get along with other families in a very strange environment. I mean, think about it. This is 9th century Iceland. It's as remote as you can be. And you don't have any towns, no villages, just farms. And they can see each other, and the tensions grow from there.
It's like a family Christmas all the time, essentially. <That's
right. laughs> And Richard, what's the purpose of these stories for modern Icelanders?
I think they're, from what I understand, and it's certainly something I found while we were there, just about every Icelander knows these stories, and they still argue about their meaning. I think it seems to be a large part of it they're telling themselves why they have to stay in this difficult place.
Okay, so they've got their horns on and their longboats, and they've come over from Norway. Am I right? Please be right. Yes.
Not the horns, but yes, they've come
no
on the longboats.
Longboats, no. Norway, yeah. And they've established themselves. And so who are we as Icelandic people? Is that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, this is about the origin of this country. And the sagas, as we have them, were written down in the 12 and 1300s. So they're slightly later versions of that settlement narrative. How did we come to be on this island? And what does it mean to live here, separate and yet connected to Europe.
The other thing about the stories, Ellen, too, is that they show how unsustainable that old culture was in some ways. They're in awe of it. But when you're extracting blood revenge so often, these things can lead to the decimation of whole families and destruction, terrible destruction, because the preservation of honour is so important. And sometimes it's the Viking that will leave Iceland to stop the cycle of retributive violence. Yeah. They're admired as the ones who actually become great warriors too, the ones who end the violence.
And when you walk up and down the streets of Reykjavik, Richard, do you find people who say, I know how my family is related to those original families, those 12th, 13th and 14th century families?
Most people do have a sense of their ancestry in Iceland, mainly because the Icelanders have this incredibly detailed genealogies that go all the way back to the first Viking settlers in the 9th century. Every Icelander just about can trace their ancestry from today all the way back to the original Viking settlers there from all those years ago, from more than a millennium ago.
And why is that important to do, Kari? Particularly now we have television and other distractions.
Well, for Icelanders, it's part of their sense of self. This is an unusual place. It was isolated for much of its history. For some periods, people didn't even think that Iceland would survive, that it would have to kind of close shop. So many people were leaving, there was famine, there was natural disaster. And what do you have left to hold on to? Well, the answer is you have stories. And in Iceland, those stories stretch all the way back to the beginning. And so if you can make a connection to the beginning of your settlement, I guess that's one way of looking forward into how it goes on.
And so if you're 10 or 11 years old, living in Iceland, going to school, do you learn these stories in the same way that our children might learn Shakespeare?
Yeah, I mean, you're given your first sagas at around that age, around 11 or 12. And I guess for a lot of kids, to begin with, it's a bit of a task. You're being told to read them, that they're good for you. But eventually, eventually Iceland...
Are they hard going? Because there's a sense in the beginning, isn't there, that... But isn't there that kind of Old Testament thing of, this one begat that one was related to this? Don't you have to negotiate that?
No, they're thrilling. They're actually thrilling to read. They leap right off the page. They're absolute medieval page turners, I have to say. Ellen, you really can't stop reading once you get started. I've come to love them almost as much as Kari does. I can't claim to love them as much as he does, because he'd probably have to kill me if I did. But these stories are so gripping and powerful. And one thing we noticed during the making of telling these stories is that they seem at the start often to be about a man, but really it's the woman. It's a central female character who turns the whole narrative with her words. And a woman's honour in these stories is every bit as important as a man's honour. And to that end, a woman, several times in this, will actually destroy everything she loves in order to preserve her sense of her own honour.
We're going to hear one of those stories from the first episode of Sagaland, this radio documentary you've made, Richard. But first, just tell me, Kari, to what extent the landscape of Iceland in some way holds these stories and justifies the boy's own trip that you took with Richard back to Iceland to record this?
Yeah, it's much more than a tax deduction.
Yes, the ATO is listening, so make it good.
Well, the farm names haven't changed at all. So all of the names that the properties in Iceland have, and they're all marked on the map, are characters from these stories. And they're not fictional characters. The sagas obviously have a creative element to them, but these were people who lived on this block of land and did these things here because of the environment that they were placed in. So the sagas are intimately located in those places.
All right, we're going to hear a little bit of the story of Gunnar, a famous Viking warrior, and Helgeth, the most beautiful and dangerous woman in Iceland. Before we listen to it, Kari, just tell us, why is she so dangerous?
Well, she has caused the deaths of her first two husbands. One was justified. He was forced upon her. The second one was more complex. She'd married a man she loved but complained about him, and her foster father took the matter into his own hands and killed her husband. So when she's about to meet someone else, she has, well, you could say, a checkered past.
And I love the expression in Icelandic. Is it a correct translation? The foster father with the first two husbands, finds a resting place for his axe in their heads.
Yeah, it's something I perhaps added a little bit myself.
Yeah, but then that's very much in the Icelandic saga tradition. You add that little bit of colour. Yes.
The oral history. All right, here's Kari reading part of the saga of Gunnar and Hallgeth.
Gunnar went to visit one of the neighbouring farmers and asked him for provisions for hay. He refused, and Hallgerd was furious. She sent another slave to Otkell's farm and told him to raid the place. He came back with cheese. The next time Gunnar had visitors, Hallgerd came out with this cheese and served it to his friends. And Gunnar reeled back and said, "Where did you get the cheese, Hallgerd?" She answered, "Don't concern yourself with domestic matters, Gunnar." He hit her across the face. She said, "I will remember that blow."
Ooh. So, Richard, a bad housekeeper who has some cheese stolen, an incident of domestic violence. What's in store for Gunnar?
Well, I can't possibly tell you because that's the most amazing part of the story, and so people will have to listen to the podcast. But I should say something about, you can hear a little bit of water in the background there. We recorded that at a place in Iceland called Þingvellir, and this is a gorge between the tectonic plates of America and Europe. And it's in summer, it's strewn with beautiful flowers, and a stream runs through it. And this was the site where the first Icelandic parliament met, the Viking Parliament, which is really the mother of our parliaments.
Wow.
The first parliament, proper modern parliament, comes from Iceland, not from ancient Greece. That's not where we get our democracy from. It's from the Vikings. And they would meet there every year to make law for the whole island. And this was a magical place to record it in, Ellen, at 9 o'clock at night when the sun was still up in the sky. Stream was there. We had the place pretty much all to ourselves. And everything just sort of shone. It had this kind of ethereal beauty to it that I'll never forget.
Kari, there's another story that runs through these programs, and that's your own search for a personal connection with the author of the sagas, this figure described by Richard as the Icelandic Shakespeare, the Icelandic George Washington, all rolled into one. Who is he, and why do you think you might be connected to him?
Snorri Sturluson is one of the few authors we actually have a name for. You know, most of the sagas were written anonymously, and so we don't know who was responsible for the versions we have. But we have this one name, Snorri. And so in Iceland, he's become, I guess, a symbol of the national literature and a symbol of Icelandic identity. My father and I didn't meet very often. I actually only met him 4 times. And on our last meeting, he asked me, you know, "What are you doing with your life, Kauri?" And I said, "Oh, well, I'm in literary studies. I'd like to write." And he said, "Ah, that makes sense." "Oh, why?" "You're descended from Snorri Sturluson, the greatest of the saga authors."
And then Kari was never able to confirm that. So that was the other reason we went there, Ellen, was to find out whether Kari's father, what he said was true, to prove it. But it was an incredibly complex and difficult business because Kari's father's name wasn't attached to Kari on Kari's birth certificate. So that made access to the whole genealogical database of Iceland really tricky. Again, this was a very, very powerful part of our time there, and it was kind of really the fifth saga, if you like. I kept calling it that anyway, underneath our whole journey there through Iceland.
Well, I won't give away what happens in the end. But, Kari, I want to ask you, in terms of your own identity, there you are in Brisbane, living around the corner from one Richard Feidler. Yeah. Sweltering through this endless Brisbane summer. Do these stories, these sagas, still speak to you there? Are they part of how you make sense of Brisbane and Australia?
Well, I read them for the first time in Australia. I started studying at the University of Queensland, and believe it or not, there was a course in old Icelandic literature. And the tutor looked up from the roll and said, "Kauri, are you Icelandic? You'll have to do the course." And that's when I began reading the sagas. And for me, the sagas were one way of going home, you know, that these stories contain Iceland. And they're very welcoming for the reader. They invite the reader to take part. They don't push the reader away, or they're not diddidactic in any way. And so the sagas were welcoming. And I've always felt that in Iceland as well, that Iceland's has always welcomed me back. So for me, it's a kind of a double pleasure to read the sagas and then to travel back with a friend and with an Australian friend to share them.
Well, it makes for wonderful listening as well. Thank you both very much for talking with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Ellen.
Richard Feidler and Kari Gislason. The first episode of their program, Saga Lands, goes to air this morning on Earshot, and people can binge listen online as well. Just search for Earshot on the RN homepage.